Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, has spring arrived yet in your part of the world? If not yet, it soon will, unless you're in the southern hemisphere. It's March, and, you know, in like a lion, out like a lamb, all that good stuff. And to greet the reawakening of nature, we continue our program series on springing forward in our daily lives and in our small businesses or career. And today we will focus on your work day, the many hours you spend earning a living. Are you a small business owner who is dissatisfied with where your business is today? Maybe you're contemplating starting a business and have a solid dream and focus, but you have all kinds of questions on how to get there. And maybe at mid-career you're working for someone else, but you're convinced that the business as a whole or your area of responsibility could and should be achieving better results. Do your ideas lack focus? Do you know how to sell them upward? What if someone could demonstrate how your business, division, or department could go on to the next level in revenue and profits? And for you and your coworkers, less stress, more personal freedom, and greater job satisfaction. Would you be interested? Well, many so-called experts and motivational speakers tell audiences that their businesses can be great, but then they fail to give any real advice on how to get there. Today's guest, George Horrigan, promises to go one better to show you exactly how to achieve that next level of excellence in your business, new or old, to create a thriving business while at the same time making it easier to operate. Sounds like a pretty good idea, doesn't it? And he promises to share his systematic approach that eliminates guesswork and uncertainty. And what I like best, George and his Fountainhead Consulting Group also offers life coaching, how to use your business or career as the vehicle to get from where you're at to where you want to go in life. And I think the integration and balance between life on the job and life away from work and with the family and is what really promises a prosperous and joyful second half, and that's what this program is all about. And George Horrigan is founder and CEO of Fountainhead Consulting Group. He's an expert on innovation and business planning. He's known as the business architect and has shown over 1,200 businesses for the past 17 years how to go to the next level in revenue, profits, and personal freedom. And he speaks from experience because he has himself created and operated 7 businesses. And he's an author. His latest book is Creating a Thriving Business, How to Build an Immensely Profitable Business in 7 Easy Steps. And he's got a new book coming out this year, Work Less, Make More, and Have Fun in Your Business. And hello, George, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Well, thank you, Roy. I'm glad to be here.
Well, on your Fountainhead Consulting Group website, you state that 97 out of 100 business owners don't end up creating the business of their dreams because they don't know how. In your experience, what's the primary reason for this failure? Is it because the dream is faulty to begin with? Or, you know, most small businesses, your experience, most of them have a well-defined vision of where they want their business to be in 5 or 10 years, or are they just sort of, you know, taking it day by day?
Well, there are many aspects to that 97% less than satisfactory statistic, but the biggest thing is the typical business owner doesn't know how to put the whole thing together.
Yeah,
they got some pieces of it, you know. The word vision is a common concept that some people have heard. So they know they're supposed to have a vision for the business, but not quite sure what that means.
Yeah.
They know they're supposed to have a strategy, but how do you develop it?
Yeah.
They know they're supposed to have a marketing and sales function, but what does that include? They know they're supposed to have systems, but how do you actually implement that? And it's like, how do I put all the moving parts of a business together?
And yeah, that's no easy task for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the biggest thing. How do you put it all together, okay?
Yeah, well, let's start with a vision. Say, you know, how do you develop a vision that's achievable, makes sense, not pie in the sky? I've known a number of people over the years that talk about some great idea they have, but, you know, how do they really test it out to determine whether there's really a customer need or whether their product can be better than somebody else's product? You know, how do they define that vision and sort of test it out before they start implementing a bunch of things down the wrong road in the wrong
mm-hmm.
direction?
Good question. Good question. Well, before I dig into that, let me take a half step back.
Yeah, sure.
We developed a unique methodology called the Structure of Success.
Oh, I see.
And what it does, it eliminates the guesswork, the trial and error, the uncertainty. I've got this business, but I want that business. How do I get from here to there?
Boy, that's
and there are five
great.
building blocks of the Structure of Success, and the foundational building block is vision.
Yeah.
And vision is, what is the destination? What is the direction of where you want to take your business?
Yeah.
What does a successful and thriving business look like to you?
Yeah. And what does it look like to you, and what does it look like to your potential customer?
Correct. Yeah. So that's the foundation, and that's why it's not pie in the sky, okay?
Yeah.
It can't be pie in the sky for two basic reasons. Number one, a vision for your business serves as the North Star. It's where you want to take your business.
Yeah.
What is the direction of where you want to go in? Number one. Number two is the vision for your business, properly defined, should function as a thing we call gravity.
Oh, I see.
And what gravity is a heavenly body, a star or a planet moving through the heavens. It has gravity, and what it does, it attracts other heavenly bodies to it. And
yeah.
those heavenly bodies then get drawn into it, either become in orbit or actually get drawn directly into it. And the vision for your business should serve the same purpose.
Yeah.
What your business is all about, where you want to take your business, okay, should be so attractive that your customers say, I want to do business with this company. This is what I've been looking for. These people will take care of what my needs are.
Yeah. So first you have to find, define who your target customers are and what those needs are. Obviously, you need to know that before you can really develop
mm-hmm.
your vision.
Correct. Correct.
So let's say your vision is fine. What's the succeeding steps then that you talk
okay.
about?
So the second building block of the Structure of Success methodology is critical success factors. And critical success factors are the make or break factors that you absolutely need to accomplish to achieve your vision. So the concept of critical success factors was developed about 20 years ago. And what it is that the theory is that every single business on the planet Earth has its own unique set of make or break factors, things that
yeah.
it absolutely positively needs to do to be successful. And if you identify your business unique critical success factors and then accomplish those, your business will be successful, period, paragraph.
Yeah.
But if you don't identify them, then, of course, then you can't accomplish them. And no matter how much time, money, or talent you throw at the business, it'll never be successful.
Yeah, you
which
don't
is
want
what
to
happened
spend
with
80%
the .com.
Of your time on the non-critical
exactly.
aspect. I knew a guy
exactly.
one time who was trying to start a business, and he spent most of his time determining where his office should be located.
Yeah, yeah. And another way of looking at your critical success factors, it's the areas that are your business that are going to give you the greatest return on your investment. Where
yeah.
do you need to focus like a laser?
Yeah.
So that's the second building block.
Yeah. And what's the third?
The third building block is strategy. Now, of course, strategy is a common concept, but we have three unique orientations on strategy. Number one, it's built upon the vision. Where do you want to take your business? Number
yeah.
two, it's built upon the critical success factors, the
yeah.
make or break factors. Number three, your strategy needs to be comprehensive. And by
nice.
Comprehensive, we've identified that there are six areas of every single business. No matter how large or how small a business is, it has these six areas. So somebody, as you mentioned at the beginning, somebody starting a business, they have these six areas right off the bat. Somebody trying to grow their business, they have these six areas.
Yeah.
IBM, Microsoft have the exact same six areas.
Yeah.
Obviously, theirs is going to be a little bit more complex, a little bit more sophisticated, but it's still the same six areas.
I see.
And those areas are, the first area is vision and leadership. What vision do you have for the business, and what leadership are you providing to drive the business into that vision?
Yeah.
Your vision and leadership drive and determine your marketing and sales. What are you going to sell as a business, and how are you going to market it?
Yeah.
Your marketing and sales drives and determines your production. How are you going to produce what you're selling and marketing? And those three are the core of the business, the foundation of the business.
Yeah, if you don't have customers, you don't have a business, obviously.
Absolutely. That is, if you don't have revenue, okay, you have no business. You basically have a sinkhole of expenses there. And when I say production, I'm not meaning production from a manufacturing standpoint. It's however you're producing your revenue. So if you're a bank, it's banking services. Your restaurant, it'd be food and beverage.
Yeah, consultants, consulting services, lawyer, legal services, whatever.
Exactly. So the fourth area of strategy is your finance and administration area, which is a support area that supports the three areas that come before that. Fifth is your human assets, your personnel, your team, and that's a support area that supports the areas that come before that. And lastly is your information technology area, your internal IT area, and that's a support area that supports the areas that come before that.
Yeah, that's sure. You certainly have to have all five of those elements working in sync to succeed in your business. But if you don't have customers, you don't have business. Can you give us some secrets to generating a continual stream of referrals and repeat business? In other words, how do we anticipate the market and beat the competition by constantly identifying new leads and finding new customers and obviously keeping the customers around that we have?
Well, the foundation is understanding what your customers' short-term and long-term goals that they perceive related to your product.
Yeah.
So I regularly speak in front of audiences, and I'll ask the audience, why do people make purchase decisions? And
that's
most people will say,
you know, people just in business just don't ask that kind of question near enough.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they seeking to purchase this product that I am offering?
Yeah.
What's the real need that it's fulfilling?
You're exactly right. Most people, when they're asked that question, they'll say wants and needs because of people's wants and needs. That is actually true, but it's actually a lot deeper than that.
Yeah.
Studies that have been done have shown that people make purchase decisions based upon their perception, not the reality, but the perception that this product, and when I say product, I'm meaning service and product, will enable them to reach their short-term and or long-term goal related to that product.
Yeah, depending on what the product is, it would be short-term or long-term. Like if it's really short-term, you want a good and tasty lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to restaurant A instead of restaurant B.
Now, the reason why that's so important is when you understand what their expected outcome, that short-term and long-term goal that they perceive they're going to get from your product, you're able to connect with them at a much deeper level.
Very true.
And once you understand that, then you can begin to connect with them at an emotional level.
Yeah, that's so crucial.
And that's where people make purchase decisions, is at emotional level. Unfortunately, most people, strictly their marketing and sales operates at an intellectual level and does not get to the emotional level, but you can't get to the emotional level until you understand their short-term and long-term goals related to that product.
Yeah, that's why, you get the emotional level. Oftentimes a product that isn't maybe as technically good or as perfect as some other product is because of loyalty and various emotional attachment that people have had over the years are more popular than the better.
And I can share a story related to that. One of our clients came to us several years ago. There were two business owners, Neil and Ben, and they were both 30-somethings, wore the casual clothes and had tattoos, so definitely a little different culture from a lot of people.
Yeah.
But they were both project manager and consultants.
Yeah.
and they worked with the pharmaceutical and medical devices industry. So Johnson & Johnson and companies like that would hire them to oversee projects, manage projects, and then consult with them. What happened was they were getting plenty of leads, but they weren't closing the leads, and they couldn't understand this. When they sat down with us and we started working with them using our structured success methodology, we shared, well, what are your customers, short-term and long-term goals related to your product? And they were selling their product on wants and needs. Okay, we're going to come in, we're going to show you how to, you know, this project management and do this consulting. Well, it turned out the person that would hire them was a project manager, a product manager in these companies. And that person would be giving a product of, let's say, this new heart medication or this new device that's going to help, bad knees.
Yeah.
Well, that project manager, in the back of their short-term goal related to this product, their project management services would be, okay, get this project done correctly, et cetera, et cetera. But the long-term goal was, if I am able to get this project done correctly and get it done sooner than my competition, I'm going to get a bonus. I'm going to move up in the organization. I'm going to become a district manager, et cetera, et cetera. And when they understood what the buying motive of that product manager was, the project manager had two buying motives. Number one, reduce the risk. I don't want to risk my future with Johnson & Johnson or Amgen if this project doesn't go quickly. And number two, get it out the door as quickly as possible.
Talking about Johnson & Johnson or whatever, the company as a whole as the buying product, and narrowing that down to the particular product manager in within the company who is seeking promotion, obviously, to stay out of trouble with his boss and, by doing the deals on time and all those things, so that you really are focused in there on people and not just the organization in total.
And once they understood that, they totally changed their marketing and sales approach, and it turned the business around.
Huh, I'll be darned. Well, let me ask you a couple of questions that are highly relevant to people of middle age. Let's start with business owners, and say your business is generating pretty good profits, but you're not having fun. And, you know, when you get into middle age, you should start at some point in time be able to slow down a little bit and like you call it, not be ruled anymore by the tyranny of urgent syndrome. I love that term you're using, your and working long hours, constantly fighting fires. And how do you avoid business burnout at middle age, and you start moving from, as you call it, working in to working on your business? What are some steps you can take to do
that? Well, you've asked about a 16-point question there, Roy. That's about a 45-minute conversation. Let me just start with a couple of concepts. Number one, each one of us has only one life to live, one single solitary life. Why would you want to spend that life doing a business, running a business that you don't enjoy? And just saying, wait a minute, I've wasted my entire life. That's number one. Number two, literally, the client that I just came from just before this interview, this came up as far as the topic. A business owner has the ability to change their business. When you're a W-2 employee working for Microsoft or IBM, et cetera, you cannot change your own destiny.
No, that's
But if you've got a business, no matter what kind of business it is, you can actually change that business. Now, it may be a small change. It may be a medium-sized change. It may be a gigantic change. But you're in control of your own destiny. So why don't you create a business that's fun, that you enjoy to do?
That's a good question.
And we show people how to do that. Okay, and that comes back to that vision. Okay, where do you want to take this business? Once you know that North Star, then you can then identify the critical success factors, the make or break factors that'll take you there, then develop the comprehensive strategy that addresses all six areas of the business. Now, let me just go back to that. Why is that so important that there are six areas of every single business and understanding how they all fit together? The reason is the vast majority of business owners, we've actually worked with over 1,200 businesses during the past 17 years. We've got a huge track record of doing this. But the vast majority of business owners view their business as one cohesive unit. They kind of see the business as a big blob. And the business owner is trying to get the business to go this direction or that direction, and they're pushing and shoving the business, but the business is not responding to them. The reason it's not responding to them is they don't realize that there are these six separate and distinct areas of a business that need to be addressed separately but still cohesively.
Yeah.
So that's why that's so important, is that how does this all fit together? Now, one step lower than that, one step more detailed, is for each one of these six areas, we as a business planning firm have developed a formula that has between four and seven elements depending on the area of the business. So for instance, the marketing and sales area has seven elements of the formula. Your production has five elements. And what the formula actually tells you, it lays out, if you do these seven things correct, you will be hitting on all eight cylinders of your marketing and sales. Huh. If you do these five things correct in your production, you'll be hitting on all eight cylinders of your production, and you will blow the doors off your competition. You will have the business you desire.
Yeah, that's that's great to break it down into details and look at all those. And you know, it's so easy when you're, even if you're a fairly successful small business owner, you get so wrapped up in day-to-day, and that sort of leads to a related question of what are some keys to team building and getting your employees on board so that they, as Tommy Lasorda used to put it, they bleed Dodger blue. So regardless of the size of your business, you can start stepping aside and spending more time relaxing and doing other things and depending on your team to go along. What are some of the keys to that team building?
Yeah, there are three basic keys. Number one, it goes back once again to vision.
Yeah.
You want your vision to be so attractive that your employees actually say, yes, this is a company I want to work for. This
is you've got to share that vision
to start with.
Some people, I don't think some managers even share their vision very effectively.
Correct. And I just wrote an article for a magazine that was published back in November.
Oh.
And when I mentioned that article is the first thing you need to do, not first thing, but one of the first things you need to do is to actually sell your business to your employees.
Good point.
You've got to get them on board.
Yeah.
And business owners totally miss that. So that's the first thing.
And also, what's in it for me? Why has it helped my psyche, and why do I feel better if the business does well? I mean, that should be obvious, but I don't think to a lot of employees it is, as long as they're not fired and the company isn't desperate.
Well, unfortunately, most business owners really don't step out of themselves. Most business owners have a really difficult time of stepping away from the business and looking at it from your employee's standpoint.
Yeah.
And what they'll say to me is, George, my employees should be glad they've got a job.
Yeah.
And they forget the point 10, 20, X number of years ago when they were an employee.
Yeah.
And they said the same thing, like, what's in this for me?
Okay? Yeah, that's true.
And if you're able to step out of yourself and just say, hey, wait a minute, this person's working on the line, answering the phone, out there pounding the pavement, but they don't see the big picture.
Yeah.
And you've got to communicate in terms that that person connects with that employer, saying, this is why I should work for this business. So,
yeah, I think that's especially true of younger employees, generation-wise, and as opposed to us old baby boomers who, you know, just went to the work every day and had that old ethic that, you know, this is my employer, and they want to know why, how they're contributing, and why it's important, what they're doing is important, and I think it's not just money. I think you have to, really bring them into the big picture emotionally as well, not just
absolutely.
Money's part of it, but
absolutely. So the first one is, number one, having a vision for the business that the employee says, I want to work for this company. I want to say yes to this company. Number two is putting together a job and a career path that employee says, I'm getting what I want. I can see the advancement. I'm getting compensation. I'm getting fringe benefits. I'm getting the emotional gain that I'm doing a good job. That's number two. And the third key thing that almost all businesses miss is how am I, in my role in this company, enabling my customers to reach their short-term and long-term goals?
Yeah, there's such a key that, you know, tying your particular function, even if it's answering the telephone or whatever, that you're helping further the goals of the customers. That's a leap that so few employees, I think, take in their minds.
And you're exactly right. Smart businesses tie back each person's job to that, and they continually reinforce that. For instance, a business here in Atlanta was recently chosen as a Small Business of the Year.
Yeah.
And the reason they were chosen is that every single employee knows why what they do is important, and the business owner, it's about a 300-person business, so this is not a small business, they celebrate successes on a regular basis.
Yeah.
We've made this achievement. We reached this level, et cetera, et cetera. And the key there is that each person needs to understand why their job has significance. Every single one of us is crying out, what is the significance of what I do on a minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour basis?
And that can even apply if the business is not doing well and has a setback. You know, everyone knows what needs to be done to help turn it around, and we're together as a team. And, you know, even in hard times, that can work if you have that feeling of oneness toward the business. But well, let's say that you're in your mid to late 50s and you're starting to think about...
Can I add one last thing to that?
No, go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead.
This is a really, really important concept.
Yeah.
We've worked, as I said, with over 1,200 businesses, and we've found there's only two ways a person can operate a business. Number one is a fruit stand. Number two is a factory. A fruit stand owner shows up Monday, sets out the food as revenue.
Yeah.
Tuesday comes in, sets up the food as revenue. Same thing Wednesday.
Yeah.
Thursday, they don't show up. There's no revenue because they weren't there to set it out.
Yeah.
Friday, they come back, set up the fruit, they have revenue.
Yeah.
Versus a factory owner shows up Monday, builds the factory, has no revenue. Tuesday comes in, hires the personnel, trains them, puts the equipment in place, still has no revenue. Wednesday, they come in, start the factory, oversee operations, they have revenue.
Yeah.
Thursday, they come in, oversee operations, they have revenue. Friday, they don't show up, they still have revenue.
Yeah.
Monday, they don't show up, they still have revenue. This whole area that you brought up, Roy, is so key because it ties to that idea, that concept of creating something that's bigger than yourself, not that fruit stand.
Yeah.
And a fruit stand is not necessarily a small business. We ran into a business recently that was a $20 million fruit stand.
Oh.
It was a key thing that the business owner was doing, and when he started stepping out of the business, that didn't happen, and the business almost failed.
Oh. Yeah, that's amazing. Well, that was the...
But how you move from that fruit stand model to that factory model, and that's when businesses really become fun.
Yeah, and that's sort of what my next question was. Say you're in your mid to late 50s, and you're starting to think about phasing out, maybe selling the business and retiring in a few years. What steps should you begin taking now to ensure you receive optimum value for your ownership share when you leave the business, and you can leave it when you want to leave it? And I guess part of it, obviously, you want a factory and not a fruit stand.
Yeah, you're exactly right. If you summed it up in one phrase, it'd be create an economic factory, not a fruit stand.
Yeah.
Now, let's go into maybe three details on that. First of all, I'm a certified valuation analyst, CVAs, and we as a firm value businesses.
Oh,
and that's part of how we developed our structured success methodology.
Yeah.
The value of any business is directly related to the profits, the net income for that business.
Yeah.
So if you have a business that you're not generating a net income, theoretically the value of that is pretty close to zero. So the first thing you need to do
is to
have
a .com set.
Yes. Well, we know what happened to the .com businesses.
Yeah.
Billions and billions of dollars wasted. I don't think that'll be repeated for a long time. Well, actually, seeing a little bit repeated now.
Yeah.
But we learned a lesson. Unless you've got a viable business model that's demonstrable, don't put money in it.
Yeah.
So first thing is, if you're looking to exit, you need to have a business that is generating a profit.
Yeah, that's for
sure. Number two is The rule of thumb that's used in the valuation community is 5 years of good financial results.
Oh,
so let's say a person's 59 years old, and all of a sudden they wake up on Tuesday morning and say, I want to get rid of my business.
Yeah.
Business hasn't been generating a profit. They said, well, I can squeak $10,000 of profit out of the business this year. Any smart business owner that's looking to purchase your business will say, well, let's take a look at the track record. Well, he lost money 5 years ago, broke even 4 years ago, made $2,000 3 years ago, broke even two years ago, and $10,000 last year. That person could say, why should I buy your business? You're basically a food stand. I will open my own food stand next door.
Yeah, that's true.
we've seen it time and time again. Yeah. So the second thing is you want to have 5 years of good financial results. And that means you need to look at your business from a systematic approach.
Yeah.
And how can I take the business from where it's at to where I want to go?
Yeah, you've got to have a plan from now to retirement to get it where you need to be to get that valuation you need. For the, and, of course, tied into the lifestyle you want to lead when you retire.
Correct. And the third thing is then, what is the economic engine? What is going to drive this business going forward?
Yeah.
And that is so key, developing that economic engine so that somebody else can look at this business and say, ah, I can see the potential from this business.
Yeah.
As compared to it being a fruit stand, hey, this economic engine, this business is, this industry is going downhill.
Yeah.
This business is going downhill. Heck, I'm not going to buy this business. I want something that's going to grow in the future.
No, that economic, and I'd also want to see the combined resources, human resources that you have in place and make sure there's a lot of depth to that. If it's a, obviously if it's a real small business, you wouldn't have that much depth. But,
well, that's that whole fruit stand versus economic factory a paradigm.
Yeah. Well, for those of us at middle age who aren't top executives and who work for someone else, maybe we're frustrated with our present job and lack of opportunity for personal discretion. Can you offer any suggestions on how we might improve our workday experience as, not the boss? How do we sell our ideas to a boss and coworkers? And what do you do if the boss ignores your suggestions? Do you just continue to suffer? Maybe you change jobs. I don't know.
You can use the same concept we just chatted about as far as sales. If you understand what your boss's short-term and long-term goals are.
Yeah.
So your boss wants to move up in the organization. People are smart. People are not stupid. If you present an idea, a concept that will generate additional profits or cut costs, that person is smart enough and you tie it to where they want to go.
Yeah.
That person's smart enough to say, wait a minute. John over here has a great idea.
Yeah.
I can actually see this as making more profit. And if the boss, John's boss, can see, okay, I'll be able to move up in the organization because of this.
And they buy in, and they might not preempt the whole thing, hopefully, but they buy in as partly theirs, and then you're on the track.
Exactly.
Yeah, but, well, in a little bit of time left, tell us a little about your book, Creating a Thriving Business, How to Build an Immensely Profitable Business in 7 Easy Steps. What are a couple of, you've probably gone through some of those steps.
Well, let's take a half step back from there. I'm an innovation and business planning expert.
Yeah.
And we show people how to achieve the hopes and the goals, hopes and dreams for the business so they can work less, make more, and have fun in their business. And and basically what we found, Roy, is that a typical business owner says to themselves, these are my goals and expectations for my business today, my hopes for tomorrow, my dreams for down the road.
Yeah.
Here's where I'm at. There's where I want to go. How do I get from here to there?
Yeah.
And the book, Creating a Thriving Business, goes into the first steps of what you need to do to create that thriving business.
Oh, I see.
What our methodology does, it eliminates that guesswork, that trial and error, that uncertainty. I've got this, but I want that. How do I get from here to there? And that's what clients love.
That's really something I think that's lacking out there in terms of the literature is a real detailed plan or a structure to get from here to there.
And you're exactly right. And that's why we developed this. Clients, it's interesting. I've actually started 7 businesses in my life. I started 4 of them back in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And then when I started our companion CPA firm back in 1995, clients came to us and said, we love these CPA services to provide comprehensive CPA services. We want more.
Yeah.
We want assistance with the business itself. And they started asking questions like, how do you start a business? How do you grow a business? How do you maximize the business's profitability? How do you take the business to the next level? How do you create an exit strategy? And I said to myself, wait a minute. These are the exact same questions I had wrestled with back in the 1980s.
Yeah.
So I took that framework I had developed, started doing additional reading and research in order to transform that framework to an actual methodology.
Yeah.
And that methodology has evolved to become what is our current structure of success methodology.
Oh, that's great. Well, where can somebody...
And clients love it because it's step-by-step, as you just said. Not a cookie cutter, but it's a systematic, structured approach that doesn't leave anything out. Everything's covered, and they go, now I get it. I can see it. I see how the moving parts fit together.
The structure, and then the people do it themselves. They actually fill in the blanks, in effect, which is you know, some books tell you do this and do that, but they don't make it personal, where you actually are can apply something and fill in the blanks and use the structure to build something yourself rather than just reading.
And you're exactly right, because so many books that are out there basically take you up to a certain point and then just stop. They don't walk you through the entire process, and we do.
Well, given where can someone best preview your book or purchase your book?
Yeah.
What's the best way to do?
Creating a Thriving Business is available in most bookstores. It's out there on Amazon. You can definitely buy it on Amazon. It's also on our website.
Oh.
On Amazon, check out the reviews it's gotten. It's gotten phenomenal reviews on Amazon.
Yeah, I noticed
there.
That.
Well,
you also have a new book coming out later this year that I love the title of, Work Less, Make More, and Have Fun in Your Business, How to Create the Business of Your Dreams in 12 Easy Steps. And when's that likely to be out?
That'll be fall this year.
Oh, that sounds like something I'd love to, if I can work less and make more and have fun.
Well,
that would be the three things.
Let me explain one thing, because the question comes up all the time. How do these books, how do my third book and my fourth book, Creating a Thriving Business and Work Less, Make More, and Have Fun in Your Business, how do they relate to each other? The easiest way to explain this with a baseball metaphor. Creating a Thriving Business shows you how to get the first base, how to start a business with our unique structure success methodology. And then how to get the second base, how to get the business so it's viable, it's got traction, it's successful, it's quote-unquote thriving. Hence the title of the book, Creating a Thriving Business. Work less, make more, and have fun in your business assumes you're already standing on second base with a successful business. How do you scale the business? How do you get the business to the next level? And that could be organic growth, additional products, multiple locations, franchising the business. We've done that for a lot of clients. Overseas expansion. Now you're standing on third base with a successful, scaled business. How do you get the business working exactly as you want? You're working X number of hours, making Y amount of money. Your employees are fully engaged. You have an exit strategy in place. You're impacting society in a desirable way. You, quote, unquote, have the business of your dreams, which is home plate.
That's home plate, all right.
Yeah.
And then you can retire and enjoy the rest of your life.
Absolutely, because that's what it's all about.
On your own terms.
Enjoying life and achieving your goals for your life.
And you're phasing out on your own terms. If you want to do it part-time or whatever, as long as you have it set up, you can do it. Well, you're also available as a professional speaker and a consultant. What's the best way somebody can find out about that and your consulting firm? Fountainhead Consulting Group. You have a website, or what's the best way to do that?
Yeah. So fundamentally, we are a consulting company. We've worked with over 1,200 businesses, and as a result of all this expertise we've developed, I've written 4 books, working on my 5th book. That'll come out in 2015.
Oh.
And I do a lot of speaking. But fundamentally, we're a consulting firm, so it's basically three ways of people can avail themselves of our services. Number one, the books, number two is we have a number of products we're going to be introducing this year, videos, audios, courseware, assessments, et cetera, et cetera. And number three is working with us We actually have a national organization we're putting together, so we can work with businesses anywhere in Des Moines, Iowa, okay, in California, New York City, Los Angeles, et cetera, et cetera. So the name of our firm is Fountainhead Consulting Group, and our website is Fountainhead Consulting Group, all spelled out, .com.
That makes
FountainheadConsultingGroup.com.
Yeah.
And my email address is george.horrigan, that's H-O-R-R-I-G-A-N, at FountainheadConsultingGroup.com. George.horrigan at FountainheadConsultingGroup.com. And our phone number is 770-642-4220. 770-642-4220.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, George. This half hour has been most informative.
It's been my pleasure.
We'd love to have you back maybe later this year to go into more detail on your latest book when it's completed. But
good deal.
Perhaps you can come back. And thank you so much, and best of success in your new books and all the other stuff you're doing.
It's been my pleasure.
Well, our guest today, George Horrigan, spoke primarily to small business owners, or those of you who are contemplating a startup, and those of you who are in a senior leadership position in your business or not-for-profit enterprise. And for the remainder of today's program, we're going to talk about the rest of us, individual contributors in companies or enterprises, and middle managers. In effect, anyone who reports to someone else, and that's most of us. As we spring into spring, we have the same objectives as those at the top: work less, make more money, and have a good time earning a living. And you know, you're not going to achieve that objective, and I'm not going to achieve that objective in a company unless the company or organization as a whole is on its game and is moving forward, growing in sales and profits. It's a all for one and one for all type situation. So let's say that you have one or more great ideas, most of us do, on how your department, function, or the company as a whole can cut costs, streamline operations, or maybe introduce new products or methods of marketing to gain new customers and to make more money. But obviously, our challenge, if we're anyone other than the owner or CEO, or at least a C-level executive who talks daily to those people, how can you sell your ideas upward with the least resistance so that it is seriously considered? Most likely, you know, you'll need your boss's support, and if you're down a ways in the organization chart, you'll need your boss's boss's support as well for your idea to get any kind of a hearing. You know, on our program 2 weeks ago, our guest, consultant Leonard Bertain, suggested it's essential to get your CEO on board even before you try to sell your idea to your boss. Now, that sounds great, but how? Of course, that a lot depends on your access to the CEO. Early on in my career, when I was a financial analyst, I worked for a large company where no one ever approached executive row, as it was called, without a formal invite, and usually you were accompanied not only by your boss, but maybe your boss's boss as well. That was pretty impossible to float an idea to the CEO or even a C-level executive. However, I worked for another large company where I was in regular direct contact with the vice chairman, the number two guy in the whole company, and I made several personal presentations directly to the CEO. And in that kind of case, I had all kinds of opportunities to propose new ideas up at the top of the company. The key here, and of course, if you work for a small business, you're in contact with a business owner probably every day, so you have lots of opportunity. Whenever possible, expose yourself to the CEO as an expert in your particular area of concentration so that that person at the very top, he or she, will want to come to you whenever there's a question in your area of expertise. If you're close enough, you may be able to informally mention your ideas to the CEO and to get his or her blessing to develop your proposal. And that, of course, is what you're seeking to do. But if you have no opportunity for direct access, you'll have to go through your boss, because obviously you can't just go around out of the cold and knock on the door of the CEO and say, hey, I've got a great idea. That usually doesn't work in most cases. Now, I don't have all the answers, obviously, to selling your idea up. Nobody does. But here are a few suggestions. The first one is, for God's sake, share your vision. If you have a great idea that will save the company money or make the company more money, your chances of implementation are totally zero if they remain in your brain or collecting dust at your desk. So float your idea to coworkers. I would do that, however, without revealing too much, because you certainly don't want someone else stealing your ideas. But you get the general idea out there and have some discussions. Search for allies both within your department and across functional lines, and see if it's something that other people are positive to, and then will be much easier to sell that idea up if you have some people to support your idea. A second idea is to start small. You don't go into the CEO with a grandiose comprehensive vision of exactly how you would like to move the entire enterprise. That's likely to receive a cold shoulder. What, you know more about the business than I do? It makes much more sense to propose something that will enhance performance within your specific area of expertise. For instance, if you're in sales, it may seem presumptuous to propose a radical product redesign, which is obviously more the function of the engineers and the product designers, but you might propose an intuitive new marketing strategy that would lead maybe indirectly to product redesign as a logical corollary, maybe some new segments of the market you could approach, but you would need a different type of product to do so, but you present it in terms of a marketing idea. And obviously, any idea that you propose has got to be in the obvious context of your boss's and the CEO's continued leadership. By no means are you trying to tell the CEO, or your boss for that matter, how to run the business. A third idea, in general, it's best to approach those at the top the first time in a relaxed, informal setting, and to just spell out your proposal in phases. Don't shoot the whole wad out at once. You just want to, at an initial meeting, your sole objective is to convince the CEO or the C-level executive or the business owner that you have an intriguing concept for change that's worthy of a more detailed exploration. And once you've been invited to develop and formally present your ideas, then it's absolutely essential that you adhere to two more guidelines. First of all, you must demonstrate beyond reasonable doubt that any proposed expansion of your personal franchise clearly will enhance the enterprise bottom line. This can't be a proposal that looks like an obvious power grab. Secondly, you never propose an increase in personal status or responsibility at the obvious expense of another. This idea has to positively impact the bottom line, and it has to sound like it'll be good for most everyone, although obviously it could lead to certain realignment or change in status of some people. Early involvement of peers is especially important if you envision a change which could directly or indirectly impact their current responsibilities. An obvious question comes to mind. Obviously, most ideas are more than half ideas, I would say, probably in the average company, are going to get rejected. And what if I present my vision for a future to my immediate supervisor and she or he rejects it out of hand without an explanation or justification? What do I do next? Well, your best immediate option is to clarify your superior's concerns. See why he or she is so much against your ideas. You know, from his or her more lofty perch, your boss may know something that you do not, and he or she may be able to offer a valid explanation of why certain elements of your proposal will not fly at this point. But then you continue to excel in your job, exceeding expectations and striving diligently to cement a relationship of mutual trust with those up at the top. And over time, through continued give and take, you may be able to craft a proposal which more closely resembles your boss's own ideas. In other words, get him or her to buy in, and then you'll start getting that support to move that idea up and into consideration. Of course, as a change facilitator, your ideas must remain firmly grounded in today's reality. It's self-defeating to envision a transformation that would be impossible for your organization as realistically can implement. In conclusion, continue to propose change even if you've been rejected one or more times. And innovation, change at every opportunity you get, always with a positive can-do attitude, never sulking if something is not agreed upon by the boss or the CEO. Become known in your shop and your company as a person of ideas, one who's always on the lookout for ways to save the company money or to earn more revenue, and above all else, be patient. Because over time, your boss and the CEO will begin to look at you as a positive idea person, and your proposals will get a hearing. In fact, your boss will begin turning to you for new ideas. You know, these ideas for selling change, plus many more, are contained in my latest book, Wake Up Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. The subtitle of that book is Recreating and Re-energizing Lagging Enterprises and Participants Midstream. And I invite you to preview my book at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or on our website, MiddleAgeRenewal.com. And that book is available both in ebook form and in traditional printed form. And as springtime comes upon us all, and let's hope it gets here soon, let's all get out there and come up with some innovative ideas to work less, work smarter, and enjoy it more, because that's what life is all about at middle age. And thank you once again for tuning in to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. I'm your host, Roy Richards. Goodbye for now.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, MiddleAgeRenewal.com.